Hey friends, how are you? I get the incredible pleasure of sharing today with you this miraculous story that's been unfolding here in Cincinnati, and it is only possible because this community was willing to take a huge leap into the unknown. So I want to take us back into time. It was after a campaign, and our head pastor, Brian Tome, was sitting out in the newly constructed Oakley Auditorium, and he was thinking to himself, is this what this is about? We're just going to build more buildings. And he heard clearly from God that, no, this is about building an army, mobilizing that army, and unleashing it against poverty and injustice and the things that are plaguing our community here and our world. Because Brian took time to listen, he and the leadership team here at Crossroads actually changed the mission statement. They modified it to say that Crossroads is a community, to connecting a community of seekers to a body of growing Christ followers who are changing the world. And that's what we're called to do. Crossroads was already involved in a lot of different reach out activities, making an impact here and around the world, but they were expectant that God was going to call us to more as a community. In the Bible, we hear that when God called Moses, Moses responded by saying, "Here I am." And that's a posture not just of listening, but a willingness to act. And so Crossroads joined a group of churches and social services who were imagining what could it look like for us to approach this massive issue of poverty in our community in a different way. That idea took shape and formed, and it became known as CityLink Center. And as it grew, they did benchmarking. They went around the country to find out what were the best practices. And then they moved to action. And they bought a property at 800 Bank Street here in Cincinnati in 2006. And this is when the story should just go right to the happy ending, right? Wrong. Those of you who are around know that sometimes when God calls us to things, little things or big things, they can be met with resistance, even things as simple as loving our neighbor. The resistance came from a neighborhood who was concerned that the programs and people we were going to bring with CityLink were going to do more harm than good. They were concerned that there was going to be this church of do-gooders who's going to get really excited about this idea, only to disappear. And that concern manifested in a 3-year legal battle. It manifested in city council taking a vote 8-1 against CityLink Center. Signs, no to CityLink, all across the neighborhood. And story after story about how this was a controversial social service mall. At that point, this organization and those individuals had a choice. Were they going to turn away or were they going to persevere? And they made the decision to persevere. So they pushed forward. And after 3 years, when the dust from the legal battle cleared, a lot of things had changed for those organizations and for the community as a whole. And the founding board members looked to Crossroads and said, "Hey, would you take leadership of this?" At that point, this was a highly controversial project that had stagnated for years, that didn't have clear service partners, and a study had actually shown that it was not financially feasible to launch. It would have been so easy for Crossroads in this community to turn away and say no. But because they had listened, because they had heard from God, because they were expectant that God was calling us to bigger things, they said yes. And they moved forward with the Game Change campaign, and 4,400 families here came together and made a $10 million contribution to see CityLink start to come to fruition. We were able to break ground in 2011. During the next year, we were forming a team, enlisting partners, creating the operating infrastructure. And in the fall of 2012, we got to have a dedication, celebration with 1,200 friends and families to celebrate this vision becoming a reality. In order for everyone to understand a little bit more about what CityLink does, here's a quick video.
Today, more than 1 out of every 3 Cincinnatians live in poverty. That's nearly twice the national average. There are many great service providers working hard to make an impact, but getting help can be confusing and complicated. Services are spread all over town, have different qualification criteria, and typically focus on only one area of your life. Since our lives are interrelated, trying to move just one piece can be ineffective or even impossible. The belief of a better way and the call to serve our neighbors inspired a new approach, the CityLink Center. CityLink co-locates services, gathering everything in one building. When clients enter, they team up with a service coordinator who get to know the client's story, their goals, and then helps connect them with the right resources at the right time. Clients progress from one service to the next to achieve their goals, leveraging additional services to remove barriers as needed. CityLink collaborates with partners to combine multiple services into programs, which address various aspects of clients' lives in one seamless experience. CityLink recruits, trains, and deploys volunteers throughout the center to amplify the impact of services. Vocational training partners at CityLink enable clients to obtain industry certifications, preparing them for careers and a clear path to living wage jobs. The model is highly scalable, resulting in more clients making more gains and sustaining those gains over time. We appreciate that life is complex, and by working holistically, we can see individuals reach their full potential. We are working together to transform lives and our community. Join us at CityLink Center.
So that's CityLink in a nutshell. And as amazing as that kind of compilation is, what's the really amazing and miraculous part is that we get to be a part of true life change. So our first year of operations in 2013, we saw 496 individuals engage in services. Last year, after growing year after year, we saw 1,201 individuals engage in services at CityLink Center. Every single one of those individuals are people who are taking radical and daring steps to change the trajectory of not only their life, but their family's life. And the beautiful part about this is a collaboration with these incredible partners. And more importantly, we've got this army of volunteers who are walking alongside our clients, learning and growing in that process. So what does this have to do with you? Well, this is a journey of listening, being expectant, acting and persevering is a personal one as well. I moved here in 2004 with a little company, Chiquita Banana. And I won't do the dance, but I came and I was driving by this big, huge church. And I was like, oh, that's a mega church. I'm never going in there. And slowly I got drawn in. And then I was sitting in the back of a dark auditorium and I was like, oh, wow, this is authentic conversations about God. So then I joined a small group where I got to have real conversations with real people about real questions about faith. And I finally got to a point where I accepted that my faith wasn't about religion. It wasn't about rules. It wasn't about me earning anything. It was about a moment where I had to accept grace that I had never earned. God was preparing my heart. And so when Hurricane Katrina struck New Orleans, a group of us came together and said, we need to do something about this. And Go New Orleans was launched. We took 400 or 300 people down to New Orleans the first year, 500 the second year, and we got to see the most incredible thing of people putting their faith in action. And that is amazing to witness and be a part of. And we're so fortunate to be a part of a church that puts their faith in action. After one of those trips, I did this like mountaintop experience of writing a note to God saying, if you give me the chance to work permanently to end injustice and poverty, I will follow because through God, all things are possible. And I signed and dated it. And then 6 months later, the chairman of CityLink Center called me and said like, hey, would you like to join the team? And I was like, whoa, that's like a really controversial project, right? I'm not sure if it's really gonna happen. I'm about ready to propose to my girlfriend. Like, this is really bad timing. But I had to look around, and fortunately I had friends that also were listening to God. And I had been expectant. I had written a promise to God. And so I moved to action. And we are so fortunate to be a part of a team at CityLink that continues to be expectant that God is using us for good things and big things in our community. This team is persevering. This is incredibly difficult work. But we believe that God has called us to this and that he's going to continue to grow what we do. Last year, we were able to launch a new program that works with individuals returning from prison who are just looking for an opportunity to engage in work. This is Grace in Action. The program is called Center for Employment Opportunities. And last year, they served over 91 individuals. We were also able to launch a center with Children, Inc. in order to truly help parents and kids at the same time. And we're not done. This fall, we're launching a culinary training program, and there's going to be a new restaurant downtown called Social OTR where trainees are going to train and then go and actually have an apprenticeship. Because of your commitment to I'm In, we were able to build and launch that restaurant, so thank you. This is incredible work that we get to be a part of. So for all of you, first, I just want to say thanks. Like, this is crazy. We have people from around the country come and say, how did this happen? And we get to say, this is what happens when a body of believers put their faith into action. So thank you. Second, there's a lot of you who are probably sitting here with time and talent. All of you have time and talent, but some of you might not be engaging that. We want to invite you to serve with your church, engage with Reach Out, engage in your local community, engage with us at CityLink Center as a volunteer, because when you engage, God can use you to transform the lives of your neighbors and will transform your own life through that process. In addition to Crossroads being the largest source of volunteers and donations, they're also our largest source of clients. We are so honored that people in this community come to find a better job, learn different skills to manage your finances, and remove barriers in your life. And we are honored that we get to walk alongside you. So if these are services that can benefit you, join us as a client. My biggest thing for our community and for me is to remember that we aren't called to play church on the weekend. This is supposed to be a place where we come and we learn, and God pours into us so we can go out into the world and pour into it. We are called to be that army to mobilize and transform the world, and we can do that together. So join us in that movement. To further inspire you, you can go to citylinkcenter.org/leap, and you can read or you can watch a documentary about three of our courageous clients. We just want to say thank you to you. We want to encourage you to take your own leap and look at the miraculous moments that happen with God when you do. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Allie, and I am here with my friend Latasha. And the two of us, we co-host a podcast that you may or may not have heard of. It's called IKR, which means...
I know, right?
And it's a Crossroads podcast for women. And we're here with our friend Betty, who was actually our episode one guest. And the way that her story unfolded in her life is just a true testimony to someone who's really found out what grace is and what it means to escape your past and to move into a new future.
I'm excited to introduce you to all of Crossroads because you are not only a business owner, you're an entrepreneur, you're married to a guy who is part of the spiritual board around here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My upbringing was kind of typical. I had this real insecure void in my life, and felt like I wasn't popular or nobody loved me. And that was kind of the reality that I had, or I thought was reality. When I was 19, I ended up getting pregnant. Had an abortion with twins, and it was terrible. Everything about it was terrible. And from that point, I just tried to just drown and space out those feelings. I started getting into drugs and anything that would just get me away from my life, really. And then I went into banking, did really, really well in that career. And eventually, a friend that had been a customer as well said, if you give me $100,000, I'll pay it back and give you 50 of it, and you can get out of banking, and that's what's going to make you happy. Yeah, by that time, I had become a vice president and could make a loan like that without other people approving of it. I knew that he was smuggling pot from Colombia, but he didn't pay it back right away. I ended up getting fired from the bank because of my behavior. I was just freaking out that this money was gone. I ended up as a fugitive from the FBI because they caught the loan.
At 30 years old.
At 30.
And so take us to the point where you get caught.
I'm in a restaurant in Key West, Florida, and all of a sudden three FBI agents come to the table and handcuff me and put me in their vehicle. I had a 4-hour drive back to the Miami jail where they were taking me, and it was just terrifying. I always was so afraid and paranoid that that's where I would end up, and sure enough, I did. And then I had a $100,000 bond that I needed to come up with to get out, and I didn't have it. I was charged with 13 felony counts, which I was totally guilty, and they had 10 years imprisonment each. So it was 130 years I was looking at.
So you're awaiting trial. What's going through your head during this period of time? Are you relieved that you've been caught? Are you still terrified?
I don't think I was relieved at that point because it was just so scary. I mean, there were fights and threats, and anytime they'd let me out of the cell, I'd go because it was so scary. And one time somebody gave me just a little tract, a little fold, you know, a little pamphlet that explained the message of salvation. And I had never been interested in that, but I read it and realized, okay, I get a do-over. And I fill in the void that had nothing else had filled.
And so you gave your life to Jesus in a jail cell at 30-something, looking at 130 years of imprisonment.
Right.
Talk about what the judge, how he sentenced you when you came back.
I ended up doing a plea bargain.
Okay.
So, but I was definitely convicted of one felony count and 5 years in prison. And the judge just said something came over him that day, and he just thought, no, I'm going to put her on strict probation instead. So, and it was a real miracle because I deserved to go.
You ended up getting a presidential pardon from President Bill Clinton.
Right.
How in the world did that happen?
It started in 88, and it didn't happen until 94. And my mother's Bible study started it. I didn't feel like I deserved a pardon because I was guilty. So, but they started the process, and I obviously had to get involved.
It says that a pardon is a sign of forgiveness.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
You know, to be a sign of forgiveness from my government.
Yes, your government forgives you.
The consequence is I'm still a convicted
felon.
That's
right.
And I always will be. It does not expunge the record, but they have forgiven me.
So I wanted you to talk a little bit more about you are a convicted felon and you have other things in your past that maybe you're living with today. Mm-hmm. Just talk a little bit about, what about the externals, just the reality of trying to live in that?
Well, after Jerry and I got married, we wanted children, and we tried very, very hard and went to many specialists and did lots of things, and were never able to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that was heartbreaking because, you know, I could have had twins. They would have been 50 this month. You know, so the fact that I was never able to get pregnant again was really heartache. And then we wanted to adopt, but at that point, because I was a convicted felon, we couldn't adopt. So it was really hard.
That's rough.
Yeah. Now, we act like grandparents and spoil kids and send them home, and we have a good life. And God's redeemed that as well. Mm-hmm. But it was really hard.
That's a hard one.
You know, something that I had to work very hard to stop blaming myself, beating myself over the head. It's choice. It's not easy, but it is simply a choice what you think about. You can stop thinking about those negative things.
So how do you do that? How do you just give us a practical example of what you do, especially for those of us who are constantly thinking the negative things?
Well, I think the first thing is to be aware of it. You know, you become aware, and then you make a decision, and then you work at it. And it's baby steps.
I also like inviting other people into it. So giving people permission. Hey, Allie, if you hear me saying that thing that I'm trying to not say, mm-hmm.
Ooh,
give you permission.
Good. I like that.
Really, I give you permission to check me on it. I give you permission lovingly.
It's certainly amazing. Just, I know that no one who sees you today would ever imagine that this is your story and your past. But to me, that's the best part.
Yes.
Because even how you look today and who you are today, everything about you speaks of, you know, a beautiful redo. Mm. So
sweet.
Thank you. That's sweet.
Love
so
to
sweet.
Hear it.
Mm-hmm.
What am I supposed to do with my life? You ever ask yourself that question? What am I supposed to do with my life? Not what should I be doing with my life, but what's the thing that I should be doing with my life? Hey, if we haven't met, I'm Jason Hobner. I lead the Crossroads community at downtown Lexington, and I've worked with middle schoolers and high schoolers and college students now for about 9 years. And man, every single one that I've come in contact with is asking themselves some version of that question. What am I supposed to be doing with my life? I think it's a question we all wrestle with. I think it's a question that is valid, and you should probably have an answer to that, or at least strive for one. I think we all want to live a life that's worth living. We want to live a life that when we look back, there's hardly any regrets. What am I supposed to do with my life? There's a lot of questions you could ask that might help you. You know, what are you passionate about? Maybe that'll help you get there. You know, what does the world need? Maybe that'll help you get there. What are you really, really good at? I think those are all great questions to help you figure out what you're supposed to be doing with your life. I want to give you one more. It's a little unorthodox, I know it is. I think you should be asking yourself the question, what do I hate? Now, I know we're in church and you're not supposed to say that word, and it's scary. But I think you're going to get a lot of ground asking yourself the question, what do I hate? Let me give you some examples. Maybe this will be helpful, maybe not. Here are a few things that I hate, right? Because I want to have an impactful life, and so I need to figure out what I hate. Here are some few things that I hate. I hate baseball. It's a stupid sport. If you need 150 games to stay relevant, honestly, we can do fine without you. I was a server for a while, but I hate when servers, when I order ranch and you bring me blue cheese. I can't stand that. That's not the same. And no, I don't want Pepsi. Thank you. I do. I hate being late. I hate when I wake up and I know four other people in the house woke up before me and there's no coffee. What were you doing that early? Make some coffee. How do you train your kids to make coffee? Gosh, I want to read that book. I hate a lot of things. We can talk about the things that I hate all night long, but I think that there's some things universally that you and I probably hate just as much. And I hate it, honestly, way more than blue cheese. I hate poverty. I hate oppression. Can't stand it. I hate racism. I'm so mad that exists in our society. I hate when people are taken advantage of. And I think that I would argue that no matter where you come down on blue cheese, you probably resonate with the things that I really hate in my life. You probably hate those things too. What is it about society? What is it about where? Why do we all hate certain things? Why do we all hate oppression? Why do we all hate someone being taken advantage of? I could tell you a bunch of different things. Here's the real reason why I think that we all universally hate some things in this world. And I think it's important that we talk about this because I believe that God hates those things as well. I believe that we are created in the image of God, that God created us, and when he was forming us, he made us in his likeness, that you and I imperfectly are like God in many, many, many ways, that when God was creating your heart, he formed it like his heart so that your heart breaks for things that God's heart breaks for too. My heart notices things that are wrong in this world. I think that God's heart breaks when he sees poverty and oppression and slavery and racism in this world. And I think that's why my heart breaks too. And so I think that when you're thinking about how do I live a successful life, how do I live a life that's worth living, I think you and I should be talking about the things that are breaking God's heart in this world. If you and I want to make an impact with our life, what are we fighting against in this world? Are we sitting on the bench watching just kind of the world take place and assuming that we don't have a role in it? Or are we asking ourselves the question, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? And is there something that you hate or annoys you a little bit more or just rubs you the wrong way, kind of more than everyone else around you? And maybe that's the thing that you're supposed to be chasing after. Maybe that's the thing you're supposed to be dedicating your wallet to and your time to and your thought to. What if deciding what you hate will lead you to where God wants you to be? You know, I hate a lot of things. We kind of talked about them, some more than others. One of the things I hate most in this world is people who settle for less than what God has for them. For some reason, I just can't stand apathy, settling with, well, it's pretty good. My life is okay. Man, I don't want a life that's just okay. I don't think you do either. I think we want a life that's next level, that leaves a legacy that our kids talk about. I hate when people just settle for cozy comfort instead of maybe the adventure that God has for them. I hate when people settle. And so my wife and I, we have dedicated most of our lives to working against and showing people the joy that you and I can get with a relationship with God. I don't think this whole God thing is a ticket to heaven. I don't. That's great and all, but I'm not looking forward to heaven at all. I have real joy here on earth. I can experience God in new and amazing ways right here on earth. So heaven is gonna be great, I'm sure, but I don't care about that. I'm not trying to tell people about God so they have a ticket to heaven. I'm telling people about God because there's real joy and peace and healing that can happen right here on earth. And so my wife, you know, this looked like her being a teacher. And she kind of worked that tension of, you know, how do I honor God and show these students who God is with how I act? And how do I also not break the law? It's a tough tension. I'm not saying it isn't, but man, there were kids in her class that experienced God like they'd never experienced before because my wife was faithful in the role that she was in. In the same way, right now, we are launching a brand new site, Crossroads site, on the campus of University of Kentucky. It's gonna be incredible. It's opening, yes. And when I say we, I don't mean myself and my family. I mean we, because this is a collective effort of people's faithfulness, willing to step out and invite God into the dark places of the world. And UK is one of those battlegrounds where we now get to tell people about Jesus in a loving way in a brand new place. And so my wife and I, we moved down to Lexington about a year ago. We're launching August 26th. And so now we're building teams and we're kind of taking steps and we're building a culture down there to be just like you guys, to be a Crossroads site. And it's gonna be amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I'm so excited about it. You know, I am excited about it. And it's super easy for me to come up on stage and say, hey, I hate these things. It'd be easy for you too. I could stop the service, give you a pen and paper. You could write down probably 15 things that you hate in this world. And that's maybe not a bad thing to do, but let me tell you something, that's not gonna be a helpful thing to do. Because we probably all hate different things and different levels, and we could talk about what you hate, what I hate, but the fact of the matter is to fight against evil in this world is not easy. Let me tell you about a time about 4 months ago, we had moved down. We had been in Lexington for, you know, about 8 months. And really, the whole burden of the responsibility is kind of put on top of me because I want to be a really good husband. I don't want to be average. I want to be a great husband. And I want to be a really good father. I don't want to be average. I want to be a really good father. And not only that, I want to start a Crossroads site and tell more people about the freedom that's available with God. And so I want to build teams. And so there was all this kind of pressure and responsibility that was piling up on top of me. And honestly, in a moment of sincerity, I kind of broke. I was overwhelmed with this fear of responsibility. It manifested a whole bunch of different ways. You know, I was less efficient at work than I should have been. I was apathetic in things I shouldn't have been apathetic. But the very thing that I thought I hated in this world was becoming true about my life because it was hard to lean in when times were tough. I remember my wife went on this trip. She flew to Arizona and she was flying back and I just had a really low point and I was just looking for a way out and I was looking for a way to kind of be free of my responsibilities. I didn't want to quit, but I didn't want to fail. And so I was kind of in that tension. I was like, what if something happened to me really terrible and I wouldn't have to follow through on my responsibilities? And so for a moment, I thought, man, maybe my wife's plane will crash. And then maybe Crossroads wouldn't ask me to do the thing that I asked them if I could do. Maybe my teammate would be taken forever from me, the woman I love, the mother of my kids. Maybe, and then I wouldn't have to bear the burden of my responsibilities. It's not easy being on the front lines. It's not easy making a difference. I think it's worth it, but it's not easy. And so, man, in that kind of low moment, in that hard place, I knew that I needed God to get me out. And so I remembered the thing that I hate. I hate when people settle for less than what God has for them. Not because it's easier, but because my life will have way more value if I lean into what God has for me. My life will be an adventure worth living if I lean into what God wants me to do. If I live the way that God wants me to live. If I act the way that God wants me to act, if I do the things that God has put in front of me with faithfulness as best I can, I believe that my life will be worth imitating, that my kids will be proud of me, and my wife will be proud of me. And so I had to walk away from the fear of responsibility. I had to lean into who I believe God made me to be, somebody that hates people who settle for less than what God has for them. And so, man, I had to confess that to friends. I had to confess that to my wife. And now I just believe that God has amazing things in store for Lexington because of my wife and I's faithfulness. I believe that God has amazing things for Lexington because of your faithfulness and the faithfulness of the team down there. And I don't want to be robbed of seeing the amazing fruit that's gonna come from that because I froze with fear. And so, friends, I believe that God has a life for you, an amazing adventure for you, that you are uniquely, there's something kind of in your heart, just something that rubs you the wrong way that is gonna take you to the next level with your relationship with God. And we've gotta ask ourselves, man, what is the thing that we hate most in this world? And I think you need to ask yourself that, but it's not enough to just know what it is that you hate, what it is that you're supposed to be doing. We have to learn to solve it. And so I'll tell you right now from the bottom of my heart, hate is a great way to figure out maybe what you're supposed to be working on or what you're wired to fix in this world, but hate is a terrible fixer of that problem. We cannot operate in hate. Hate is not the execution. Hate is not gonna fix anything. Love is. Man, it's not enough to just hate something. Imagine my marriage, and I wanna have an amazing life with my wife, and I hate fighting with my wife. I'm sure you do too. I hate fighting with my wife. Imagine if I responded with hate to that. What would that solve? It would do nothing but dig us deeper. Imagine if I hated poverty and it looked like me hating people who were in poverty. What would that look like? That's gonna solve nothing. Hate always brings destruction. Hate always brings suffering. Hate always brings pain. No, friends, hate is a great tool to see what it is in this world that isn't right, that breaks God's heart, but love is the tool that's gonna solve it. We've gotta respond in love. Dr. King, with all that he had been through and all that he had said and all that he had done, Dr. King said this: darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. You see, I think that there's things in this world that you and I hate because I believe that God hates those things as well. I believe that God hates things in this world. It's in the Bible. If you go to Proverbs 6, these are the things that God says that he hates. There are six things the Lord hates. Seven that are detestable to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush to evil, a false witness who pours out lies, and a person who stirs up conflict in the community. Is that what you expected the top seven to be? I did not. Man, I expected you put poverty, oppression, slavery. Those things have got to break God's heart, right? And I think they do. But what's amazing to me is when I look at the seven right there, man, I'm guilty of at least three of those this week. And what's amazing is that when God looked at me and he hated the things that I was doing this week that were lying and causing trouble in my community, lying about others, he didn't respond to me with hate. No, he responded to me with love and forgiveness and mercy. And that brought me joy and peace and love. If we are gonna experience everything that God has for us, we cannot respond in hate. We've gotta be like God, and we've gotta respond in love. Hate cannot drive out hate. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only love can. Dr. King said one more thing. I have decided to stick with love because hate is too great a burden to bear. Man, hate causes conflict. Hate causes strife. Love brings joy. Love brings peace. Love brings forgiveness. You imagine Martin Luther King and all that he'd been through. Man, if there was any man that was worthy, especially with how his life ended, if there was any man that was like, okay, I could understand why he responded with hate, but he took a stand and he said, man, no, we can't move. I cannot respond to their hate with hate. I've got to respond with love. Because he saw a future in America that was more beautiful than the current present. And so you and I, friends, if you want to see a future in your life that is better than the present, we have got to respond in love. Hate may be the quickest way to identify evil, but love is the quickest way to eliminate it. So my question to you is, what do you hate? What is it specifically that you hate? What are some things that you can't stand? Maybe it is poverty. And so what would it look like to respond to the poverty in your city with love? Where should you be spending your time? Where should you be spending your money? Man, it's not enough to just say that we hate something, man. Is there evidence in the past year of doing anything about it? Because if not, all we're doing is responding with hate. All we're doing is just fueling the hate instead of responding and solving with love. Maybe you hate that some kids are at a disadvantage for others. What does it look like for you to step into that, to lean into that, to bring love to kids who don't have someone to love them, to care for them? I volunteered with students for a long time, and in one of the camps that we did, there was this girl, and she just loved camp. Very excited, always joyful. Second day, she just loved camp more than everyone else. So one of the leaders asked her, "Say, hey, why do you love camp so much? Like, what is it that's so excited about camp?" And she said, "Well, last night was the first night that I slept all the way through the night, knowing that someone wasn't going to come into my bed and hurt me." Was there any question that any volunteer or leader at that camp went to sleep that night and wondered, I wonder if my life is making any difference? No, absolutely not, because everyone there created a loving, safe environment for that girl to be able to be at peace, even for a little bit. She got the help and the support that she desperately needed because people responded with love. Maybe it's you hate that there's a stigma against mental health in this world. Maybe you hate that there's a stigma against depression. Maybe you can't stand that people are addicted to substances and you're not gonna stand for it anymore and you're willing to fight for their freedom. What is it that you hate? But it's not enough to hate. What is it that you hate that you can respond to in love? What's the next step of love in your life? So friends, if you want to live an impactful life, a life that matters, a life that your kids talk about, it's not enough to just hate the things in the world. It's not enough to just notice them. How do we take a step toward solving them in love? Thanks for your time.
Thanks for joining us, guys. If you go to crossroads.net/spark, you can watch all the past talks as well as the future ones. If you download the app, all the talks are in there as well, and you can connect with people in the community and grow spiritually. Have a good week.